We're on record. Let the record reflect that we're proceeding with the House Health and Social Services Committee meeting. I hereby call this meeting to order. Today's date is the 20th, January 2013, and the time is 3:03. Please take a moment to turn off all electronic devices, not just silence them, as they may interfere with the media system. And as a good example, I'll turn mine off. Maybe. It's fighting me. It doesn't want to turn off. All right. Present today, Representative Keller. Representative Seaton. Representative Reinbold.
Here.
Representative Nagak.
Present.
Representative Tarr.
I am here.
And myself, Representative Higgins. I would like to recognize Commissioner Sturer from the Department of Health and Social Services and Wilda Laughlin, the Special Assistant to the Commissioner. Do we have any telephone teleconference? On the phones, we have Carrie Fisher, Acting Director of Division of Public Health, Dr. Ward Hilbert, Chief Medical Officer, and Margaret Brody, Director of Health Care and Services. And if there's anyone I missed, please forgive me, and let us know that you're here. I'd also like to recognize the staff today: Bush Carver, which is the House Recording Secretary; Betsy Dorn, which is the LIO Moderator; Paul Verhagen, which is my committee aide. The purpose of today's meeting is to hear an overview of the Department of Health and Social Services. Committee members should feel free to ask questions through the chair as they arise. Commissioner Storer and Special Assistant Laughlin, would you please come to the table? And when you are ready to begin your presentation, by stating your name and your office for the record. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bill Storer, Commissioner of the Department of Health and Social Services. Happy to be here today. You may find me a little nervous. My first presentation each year, even at my age, tends to make me a little uncomfortable. I prefer to, as Representative Keller full knows, I'd love to work behind the scenes much more than in front, but in this position, I don't have a lot of choice. So I'll be here with you. I'm going to start out by softening you up a little bit. Oil closed today up 68 cents, and it's now at 110.54 for last year. So as I begin this presentation, please be aware of that. In the audience, attending, and before you ask the question, I'll say it. I ask for as much participation from the department as I can get. They do go back and do their day jobs immediately after they leave here, but I need the reinforcements, and I ask them to be there as well with me. With me is Wilda Laughlin, my special assistant. I think the majority of people either know Wilda either by reputation or have met her since you have come here. And she and I spend a lot of time roaming the halls and responding to your requests. In addition, Ree Sailors, Deputy Commissioner, is in the room. Melissa Stone from the Department of Division of Behavioral Health. Dwayne Mays from Senior and Disability Services. Dave Cody from Alaska Pioneer Homes. Sarah Woods, the Deputy Director for Finance. Tim Banaszak, our IT guru. Karen Forrest and Jana Hurd from Juvenile Justice. And late Ron Creer, Director of Public Assistance. So with that, what I'd like to do is go into an overview of the department. As I go through this, I welcome questions, Mr. Chairman, as we're going. It's I've done this a time or two, so hopefully the interruptions won't in any way affect what we do. With that, let's begin the journey, if we would. overview of the, basically, our organizational chart for the department. We're a big department. We have 3,600 employees, total budget of $2.6 plus billion dollars. Representative Keller, Representative Seaton are fully aware of that, and every year I come in, it seems to get bigger, but hopefully this year you'll see that there's significant changes in the wind. I would need to point out that we currently have two vacancies, a Deputy Commissioner for Medicaid and Healthcare Policy and an Assistant Commissioner for Finance and Management Services. I am hoping to fill the Deputy Commissioner for Medicaid and Healthcare Policy very shortly, and we continue the search for an Assistant Commissioner. My philosophy is I'm going to hire right. I'm not going to hire to fill a position and put a body in place. So I get criticized, but we have a very capable staff in both those areas, and they've stepped up to the plate, and we have not suffered as a result of it, in my estimation. The Department of Health and Social Services has continued to focus on a priority system. Priority system that's responsive to both the needs and the expectations of our residents. Our three priorities, and these are not in rank order, these are the three priorities, I would say equal weighting across the department. Health and wellness across the lifespan. We have an aging population in Alaska, but our kids are our next generation. They are our next leaders. And so we need to have womb to tomb, as we used to say in the healthcare field when I was working in there, services available across the lifespan. We're an aging population. Without looking at any specific people in the room, there's many of us that are approaching Medicare age and or are have reached Medicare age, and that's where our healthcare costs go up. In the last 10 years of our life, on a national basis, we expend about 80% of all the healthcare expenditures during our lifespan. Healthcare access, delivery, and value. This is part of my theme of we need to reach out, we need to make sure services are available, whether it's in Bush, Alaska, or whether it's downtown Anchorage, or Juneau, or Ketchikan, or Wrangell, or Petersburg, or wherever it may be. But we also have to also ensure that there's not just access, but delivery of those services, and that's quality services available to everyone, and value. I'm a money hawk. I look for cost efficiency, cost effectiveness. We've got a lot of room to grow in Alaska in that area, and we continue to focus on that. The third area is safe and responsible individuals, families, and communities. You're going to hear a resounding theme out of the department this year on this particular one, because there's so much we can do. It's a fertile field, whether it be children's services, whether it be public health, whether it be Medicaid services. We need to continue to work towards safe and responsible individuals, families, and communities. Priority one, expansion on that, promote and protect the health of Alaskans. Provide quality of life in a safe environment for Alaskans. Priority two, healthcare access, delivery, and value. Manage healthcare coverage for Alaskans in need and facilitate access to affordable healthcare for Alaskans. Priority three, strengthen Alaskan families. Protect vulnerable Alaskans. Promote personal responsibility and accountable decisions by Alaskans. In other words, bring our patients, our residents to the table with us. So it's not the payer and the provider at the table, it's the payer, provider, and consumer at the table. Safe living, healthy living, wearing helmets, avoiding alcohol abuse. Our service philosophy, and if you haven't heard it, you're going to hear it a lot from me. Deliver the right care to the right person at the right time for the right price. It's a constant theme that I've stressed over the years, and I'm happy to report that I was just at a federal meeting a few months ago, and somebody at the speaker at the time stood up and he used that exact phrase, and he says, I don't know who to credit it to, but there was some guy on the West Coast. That's a good feeling. Tied to that, though, is it's not just a Medicaid issue. It's just not just a department issue. We're a big department, but in addition, we have health expenditures and corrections and workers' compensation, TERS and PERS, Alaska Care, and we need to maximize our ability to leverage that. We have a lot. We spend $2 billion plus right now just on health care. And so Commissioner Hultberg and I are continuing to work on how can we leverage that? How can we work with our providers to provide more cost-effective, more efficient, more effective care? So you'll hear more about that throughout the year from both of us. Quick overview of the department. Let me back up for just a second because I want to talk about those priorities and how we're cascading that down to the divisions and how the divisions then will feed up to a greater level. Because our entire priority system this year is based on effectiveness and efficiency measures. So we're not, in our measurements in previous years, both Representative Keller and Representative Seaton have seen our 138 pages of deliverables, and where we report a whole bunch of numbers and don't really see anything. Everything that we do, we're going to work toward tying to those priorities and then cascading down to the divisions, where the divisions feed back up to us how they're going to respond to those priorities in their respective areas. So you will see an effectiveness measure and an efficiency measure in each of their areas. Alaska Pioneer Homes is probably one of the greatest experiments that Alaska has done. When you go into a Pioneer home and you see the services that the residents of the Pioneer homes experience, and you see the home environment and protection that they receive, it's just great to see. Last year I stopped in during Oktoberfest at the Palmer Pioneer home, and they were celebrating Oktoberfest, and it was a Oompa band was playing, the residents were clapping, they were eating German food, and even one or two of them had their beer in their wheelchair as they're in the environment, and it just shows it's a home environment. It's a great resource for Alaskans, and Alaskans are jealous of that capability. Ask me, because when I've attempted to look at budget reductions over the years to the Alaska Pioneer Homes, Alaskans have come out of the woodwork to the legislators in many instances to say we need to protect this resource. Dave Cody, who's in the audience, will be providing you his complete overview of the Pioneer Homes. Division of Behavioral Health, I don't think there's anybody here in the room that doesn't say that behavioral health issues affect all of us, whether it be substance abuse, whether it be mental health services, whether it be FASD, fetal alcohol syndrome, or on and on and on. And Melissa Stone, our director, will be presenting that as we go forward. But suicide, if you talk about our villages, it's a constant issue. And it's something that we need to do a better job at, and it's where innovation is going to be a big part of moving forward. But it's about partnerships. Over the years, I've talked about partnerships and that we can't do this alone. The department can't mandate services occur, can't mandate what happens in the community, that it's about partnerships with our provider community, with our tribal entities, with our tribal health organizations, but it's those partnerships going forward. Christy Lawton has maybe, you know, I'm going to say it, as far as I'm concerned, she has the toughest job in the department, and that includes my job. Christy oversees the Office of Children's Services, and without sounding like it's a pity pot, but it seems that no matter what they do, it's going to be called into question. Whether you take a child out of a home to protect him or you leave the child in the home because of family unity. It's an issue that they deal with on a daily basis. One of the big challenges we're facing right now are how do we protect our workers? How do we ensure that their safety is occurring? I recently had a safety evaluation done, and a former state trooper, head of the governor's security group, worked with me, and he said, you know, it's amazing. He said, you send those social workers out to, you know, potentially a domestic violence situation, and they have to go pull a child out of a home to protect that child. And the troopers would never send a trooper out alone to a domestic violence situation. And he said, you need to think about that. You need to think about how you're doing it. So you're going to see a push this year to not arm our social workers, but to better equip them to be able to deal with their own protection and safety, as well as protection and safety of those children and families that they work with. So the theme is safe children, strong families. And we will be carrying that theme forward throughout the year. Division of Juvenile Justice. We have juvenile justice facilities throughout the state. I get criticized every time I say this, but the kiddie jails, as they're referred to, are not jails. They're treatment centers. And I've been visiting them as I've had the opportunity to visit the facilities throughout the state, and they are indeed treatment centers. They're spending a lot of time on trauma-informed care right now. It's finding out what traumas the children that we have in those facilities are experiencing so that we can better address the needs that they have. Through their trauma-informed care program, as Barb Benjamin, the director, will report to you, we've had major reductions in negative incidents with the kids acting out in the facilities. And there's a lot to be said for it. But rehabilitation and returning the kids to a home environment is what it's about. And believe me, some of these kids are really tough. I've had lunch, sat down and had lunch with three of them recently in Bethel. And these were kids in maximum security, and they were tough kids. I'm thinking, you know, do I weigh more than them? Can I still take them? And those issues, but it was an eye-opening experience for me. But also, in speaking with them and talking with them, once they began to open up a little bit, they're getting well. It doesn't mean they're well; they're getting well. Barb will give you lots of stories along those directions. Healthcare services, this is our main Medicaid shop. This is where the majority of the hospital services, physician services occur and are paid through. It's about $900 million. Margaret Brody is the director. Margaret has, I think she's been in the position about 6 months and has just grabbed a hold of it. And Margaret is online today, and I'm proud of what she's done, and you'll see in the Medicaid budget some of the many wins that we've had as a result of this. But their big issue is access and making sure that we're working with our tribal partners to ensure access out in the communities. And you'll hear a lot more from her on that. Division of Public Assistance, Bearded Smile sitting in the back of the room. We'll be reporting out on that, but public assistance has a wide variety of programs that they oversee: the adult public assistance program, child care, chronic and acute medical assistance, Denali kid care, family nutrition, food stamps, general relief assistance, heating assistance. So they touch the majority of people that we have involved with the department. And Ron will be reporting about those programs, the good, the bad, and the ugly of what he's facing, and the challenges, as well as some of the successes that he has. Division of Public Health, two smiling faces on this one. Our chief medical officer is Dr. Ward Hurlbert. Ward has a long history in the state, having been a physician out in the bush, as well as working through ANTHC, and is known to many. you know, I persuaded Ward to hang around. He's the only guy I know older than I am, still working. We continue to work together on ways in which we can provide higher, better levels of care to the recipients. Carrie Fisher is the acting director of the division. Division of Public Health is a big division. There's public health nurses throughout the state and overseeing that. One of the big challenges that I placed with Carrie is measuring what we do. There's a whole lot of what we do in the divisions that in this division that we don't report enough of, and we need to report more of and be more involved with it. Carrie's efforts for accountability and beginning to measure the 75,000 plus public health nursing visits that we have on an annual basis, making sure that we're getting shots out to the kids when we need the immunizations that we need for the kids, and making sure that we're reaching out with flu shots and the capabilities that we can provide to help. And by the way, we do have a flu shot program coming, and if you haven't gotten your flu shot, we're offering them later this week. Paid announcement. Dwayne Mays, Senior in Disability Services. Dwayne will kind of shudder about this, that I'm saying this, but it's our fastest growing program in the state. We have an aging population. You look at our population in the last census, our senior population grew by almost 70% from 2000 to 2010. Well, how does that relate nationally? And nationally, it grew by about 15%. So we are a significantly aging population. And a big part of that is contributing to his cost increases. The complexity of what they do, are part of the challenges of what they face, and going to be talking about not only some of the innovation that they're doing, but also the challenges that they're encountering in dealing with our seniors, as well as our disabled population, and as well as our personal care attendant population throughout the state. Some would say that soon it's going to eclipse our regular Medicaid budget. We're hoping that it doesn't, but those costs are going to go up and will continue to go up. It's an area we're trying to get our arms around, but it would be significantly challenging for us. So the vision of the Department of Health and Social Services is for Alaskan individuals, families, and communities to be safe and healthy. Questions?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just had a quick question about the food stamps, and maybe the division director will get into this a little bit, what's happening with reductions at the federal level and how that will impact what we're doing at the state level.
Representative Tara, through the chair, we don't know what this is going to do. We really don't know where a lot of the federal programs are going to be going. We've seen some early indications in children's services around adoptions, around foster care payments, that it's all down and going downward, but we honestly don't know where. We do have a bit of reprieve with the Farm Bill being passed, and or at least extended, I'm sorry, not passed, and so we're hopeful, but Director Creer will be able to report on that, and in the budget reports we'll also be talking about it, but that is a risk. It's a very real risk going forward, but we just, until we get through sequestration and some of the other challenges at the federal level, we don't know where it's going to be going.
Representative Nygaard.
Thank you, Representative Keegan. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Commissioner, you were talking about the Pioneer Homes in several parts of the state. And I know it's an aging population. I'm one of them. I'm one of the 70%. But I think we can have partnerships with those of us who provide health or homes for the seniors, especially in my part of the world, in the North Slope, and also over in District 40, rest of District 40, and Costabile. And so I think, you know, there the space to take care of our elders is limited. There's more people aging, and they have problems, and we have beds, but we don't have enough beds for those people who need the care. So a lot of times we send them to Fairbanks or Anchorage, and so that costs a lot more money, I think, to the state. If we could partner with the regional centers like Barrow, Bethel, Nome, Kotzebue, those places, and others, regional centers, if we can partner with them, they already have programs, and we could just, you know, see how we can reduce costs between the state and the governments that take care of our services in our parts of the world. And I told you during the, Mr. Chairman and the members, I told you if I had a platform, I would use it. And I have a platform. I have an issue that people who are victims of suicide, sorry, you see people who are despondent or who look like they got the weight of the world on their shoulders, but in the rude person you say may be that person. I had to live through that. And so I promised myself, if I ever had a platform, that I would talk to more people. Maybe we talk to people, you know, just to talk to them. Maybe they have something on their mind that's weighing heavily on them. Be rude. Talk to them. You know, the person you say may be that person. And I don't want anybody else to go through what my family went through when my son killed himself. So I promised myself if I ever had a platform, I would use it. We need to talk about it. We can't just shove it aside. We can't put it in a closet, and we have to be brave and confront it. We need to talk more about it. And we need to talk to our young people especially to send that message that they are wanted, they are needed. Especially in Bush, Alaska. It's so prevalent in some parts of the state. So if I promised myself I ever had a platform, I would use it. And so I'm going to continue that, because we need to talk about it. We need to make sure that the people are hurting. Maybe we can help them. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative
Rappel. Through the chair, thank you. Just a couple questions. In regards to the Affordable Care Act, or in other words, many call it Obamacare, I know this is a multi-million dollar question, but what are the impacts do you see having on your departments?
Representative, if I can go through the chair, this could be a whole meeting.
I know.
Well,
in a nutshell,
should we do a Medicaid expansion? Medicaid expansion would mean an additional 40,000 lives minimum coming onto the Medicaid rolls. For the first couple of years, the federal government would pick up the cost of the benefit, in other words, the cost of care for those individuals at 100%. But we would have the infrastructure costs associated with it. Director Creer is currently going through implementing a new eligibility information system. And that eligibility system is the engine that they use to enroll folks. I'm hoping that, you know, we get a little more time so that he can bring that system up, because the current system is nearly 30 years old. It's a non-relational system. We band-aided, taped it together to survive. It continues to pay claims, or it continues to not pay claims. It continues to enroll individuals, but adding, you know, basically a third increase to our population, we're going to have significant costs associated with that, plus the workers to be able to enroll those individuals. So we're looking at $5 to $8 million annual operating costs per year with a Medicaid expansion. Beginning in 2019, when we're responsible for 10%, we're looking at about an additional $33 to $40 million annually of general fund to be able to support that program. So we will have impact. One of the questions that comes up is we have access issues right now in many areas, and if we increase the Medicaid population by 40% or by 30%, 40,000 lives, what does that mean toward access for those individuals? Because I think we all know that we're much more judicious about the use of health care when we have a significant portion to pay, or we have to pay at all, and we look at it and visit it. So, you know, there's significant issues there. The Federal Health Care Exchange, we went with the federal option as opposed to either the partnership or the state option. Mm-hmm. And I think it was the right thing to do. I think it was the right thing to do because had we taken on the state option, we would have been faced with how do we pay for $5 to $8 million, once again, same $5 to $8 million of annual operating expenses for a relatively small number of lives to enroll. And if the feds are going to do it, they have to figure out how they're going to pay for it. They say that it has to be self-sustaining in the state as well, but you know, at least they have to come up with a way to accommodate that or pay that. The costs are going to be there. We are presently evaluating the Medicaid expansion and how, if we are going to do Medicaid expansion, how we are going to do it, you know, how most efficiently we can do it, and what the risks are. You know, the current Affordable Care Act says that in 2014-15, be 100% federal, declining to 90% federal by 2019. But we don't know what it's going to be beyond that. We don't know what's going to be beyond the current administration. Is there going to be an issue around, well, we don't have the federal money to pay for this in the states because it's billions and billions of dollars of increase, and so we're going to add it to the current Medicaid FMAP, the current participation level by the federal state government. In our current Medicaid, we're 50% state, 50% federal. If they went to that, it would be an additional about $160 million a year of GF that would be paid to cover this population.
Through the chair, follow-up? Okay, so first of all, you said the director who was responsible for engineering, getting people, you know, identified for the program, I needed his name, and approximately is it over 100,000 if you know, the people that are currently enrolled in Medicaid right now?
Representative Rangel, through the chair, we have about 135,000 currently enrolled in Medicaid. The additional growth would be about an additional 40,000. That's our estimate right now. And then the woodwork effect people. Woodwork effect people are people who are currently eligible for Medicaid, but for one reason or another have never signed up. And the Kaiser Foundation has estimated that at about 7,700 in the state of Alaska.
And through the chair, is that Denali KidCare? Does that includes Denali KidCare, or is that in addition?
Denali KidCare, Representative Rangel, through the chair, Denali KidCare is a Medicaid expansion, so they are a part of the 138,000.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Representative Segal.
Thank you for being here to present this. 2 years ago, the state legislature passed a resolution unanimously, both the House and the Senate, calling on the administration go to a prevention of disease as a primary model for health care and to make residents of Alaska aware of the potential for vitamin D to aid in that prevention of disease. And I know that the Department of Administration looked at the cost savings from those estimates and has now gone to, for all active members, free vitamin D testing without any copay or any deductible for their population, just as a cost-saving measure. Can you tell me what the department has done as far as promoting the idea of a prevention of disease model and fulfilling that request for making the population aware of the numerous studies that we've forwarded in that resolution?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, I believe you've had this discussion with Dr. Hobart, but he has been point on that. He's been lead on that through the Division of Public Health, and we have done an awareness. We have done awareness bulletins, I believe, through and we did one immediately after the legislation passed. And I think there has been a follow-up one later in the year. But in terms of actively either prescribing, promoting, or testing, we have not taken that on.
Thank you. I guess there's some confusion from the legislature or from my standpoint within the legislature and a number of others. I mean, we just had the U.S. military come out with a suicide study in which they looked at 458 military suicides and paired those with 458 gender, rank, and age characteristics of other military members. Their study that just came out in January of this year, earlier in the month, was that those veterans that are in the lowest levels of vitamin D are twice as likely to successfully commit suicide as those that had higher levels of vitamin D. And so in our suicide prevention methods, are we looking at the studies that have been done and peer-reviewed and published as far as the potential for vitamin D to lessen that suicide rate on Alaskans, because we know Alaskan veterans have some of the lowest vitamin D in the nation?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, first of all, I'm not familiar with the study. If it just came out this month, I'm probably 6 months behind in my reading, so I apologize for that. But in terms of what we've done, I don't have the answer to that, but I can get the answer for the committee, and we'll forward that.
Thank you. We'd appreciate that. I have a question to the commissioner or to maybe Dwayne Maines on the senior and disability services. You said that number's rising. In cost. Is that because of services or the amount of people coming into the services? Because, you know, I grew up in Alaska and our population hasn't really changed. I mean, it has gone up. So what's causing the increase? Is it more people just getting into the programs? Where are we at with that?
Representative Higgins, through the chair. Excuse me. It's both. Our services continue to go up, and the people accessing services continues to increase. I can get the exact numbers on that, but that's been a constantly upward trend for us over the last, I would say the last 5 years.
Yeah. Yeah, I do rounds at the Denali Center. Okay. And so, anyways, I appreciate it. Any more questions?
As a follow-up through the chair, thank you. In regards to our programs, how do they compare? I've heard, I need to do research on this, I understand you probably have already done it, that our programs are easier to get into and last longer. How do we compare with other states? And I would like to know the director that you said was the person who was in charge of the Medicaid.
Representative Ryan Bold, through the chair. When you say how do our programs compare to other states, in terms of length of time in treatment, and can you clarify the question just a bit?
Yes, it's basically in regards to some are 3 years, some are 5 years, some are longer. The eligibility, you know, to get into those programs, you, all sorts of things like that. It just seems like 135 or 138,000, you know, people for a state of our size seems quite high. So I'm just wondering, you know, how difficult it is to get into these. Is it lack of jobs? Is it a lack of other, you know, people being allowed to, you know, have insurance? You know, the employers. It's just, I'm trying to figure out why the number is so high.
Representative Reinbold, through the chair, you're speaking people enrolled in Medicaid. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
We're about average. We run 18 to 20%, and among the states, it's traditionally 16 to 24%. So we're right smack in the middle. We've had a bit of an uptick the last couple of years, and I think that ours. It's kind of fallout from the recession in the lower 48, and we're finally catching up with some of it. It's flattened out now again, and I'm hopeful that it continues to stay flattened out, but I can get those numbers for you on an annual basis going back the last 5 years if you'd like.
That would be good.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative. Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you. Earlier you talked about the priorities of all the divisions within the department in terms of effectiveness and efficiency. Did you do an assessment department-wide and to see what those would be for each division within the department?
Representative Nagyak, through the chair, yes, we have. And that's a continuing, unfolding thing. I referred to the 138 pages of performance measures that we used to have. We took those and we focused on how those tie into the three priorities that I spoke about. And each division then is, as our priorities cascade down, each division then rolls up their performance measures to evaluate that. And as each of them presents, and as I present throughout the year with you all, I'll be covering those, as well as the directors will be covering those.
Mr. Chairman, follow up.
Go ahead.
Thank you very much. Did you when you did those studies? Did you look into if it was effective or? At the time when it happened, or did you change some of the things, or get rid of the programs that weren't producing, or when after that study, or?
Representative Nagyak, through the chair, the intent of the entire program is to do just that, to begin to take a look at, is it effective and is it efficient, and. We want to do that with all the programs that we have in the department because we need to get not only value, but we need to get quality, and we need to measure it, and we need to begin to say we can't afford to do this anymore because it's not effective. We need to be willing to do that, and I know when I was a director, it was very scary to me, so I'm hoping that the directors are afraid of it, but also that they're embracing and supporting it because it's what we have to do.
Excellent. Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One follow-up question, just so the numbers in my mind. Our reimbursement relationship with the federal government is 50%, 50%. And then right now, you know, the 135,000 Alaskans that my colleague was mentioning that are qualifying for service, just remind us of the income guidelines for that.
Representative Tarr, through the chair, I can't remind you of those,
okay.
But I will get that for you because it's based on family size and it's based on a variety of factors. It's a big chart, and I'm not even going to try to answer it.
And just as a follow-up, though, based on the federal poverty rate right now, do you have that number in your mind? What that is?
Representative Tarr, through the chair, I don't.
Okay.
Are there any other questions? All right, seeing no other questions, first, let me premise my comments on the fact that, you know, as some of you know, I'm in the healthcare profession, and I, for one, appreciate all the work that the commissioner and you guys have done over the years. I've seen our services expand. I think we have one of the best in the nation, and I'd like to see it, you know, kept that way. We're leading the pack, and we'll continue to do so. But also there are some bureaucracy issues and, you know, things that we have to tweak, which we will. But I want you to know that as a professional in the health profession, I do appreciate all the hard work you guys have done for that. So with that said, Commissioner Struer and Ms. Laughlin, thank you for your informative presentation. This committee looks forward to working with you and your department. Are there anything else? No? Then our next HES committee meeting will be at 3 p.m. on Tuesday, January 29th on 2013. This meeting will be adjourned.